Special coverage from the New Orleans Investment Conference is brought to you by Victoria Gold Corp, leading UConn's new gold rush.
Welcome back to Soar Financially here at the New Orleans Investment Conference. My name is Kai Hoffman. I'm the HJR Mining Guy on Twitter and the CEO of the Soar Financial Group. Thank you so much for joining us here in New Orleans. And I'm joined by Adrian Day of Adrian Day Asset Management. Adrian, it's great to see you in person.
Well, thank you for having me back, Kai.
At least once a year we got to do this in person. So it's great to have you. Thanks for joining us here. Let's dive right in. Like, I like to have my conference interviews like short, snappy, and to the point.
Okay.
You're talking about gold in the current environment. When will it take off? Let's start setting the scene here, I think, right? Because you gave me a bit of a brief. That's the word I was looking for. It's been a long day. To set the scene for us.
Yeah. Well, the first thing I started off by saying is, you know, last year a lot of people had very high expectations for gold because we had a war in Europe and we had inflation, and everybody thinks war, inflation, wow. Gold's going to the moon. And I think people had high expectations, and I think that's evidence of some misconceptions about gold and how gold react in different environments. I'll also say, though, but if you look back a year ago, gold was just a little over 1,600. I don't think that's such a bad performance for an asset that is meant to be a hedge, that is meant to be an insurance asset.
It's 12% year over year, I think.
It's not that bad. It's just that people always have it. Gold people, and I'm a gold bug, so I'm on your side, guys. Gold people always have these overly optimistic expectations for gold, and they always expect things to happen sooner than is realistic. So you start by looking at, well, why hasn't gold performed? Well, in fact, gold has performed, just not as much as some people would want. So then I looked at what is the current environment, you know, what are the factors that make up the current environment? Well, we have geopolitical instability, we have, you know, a chaotic U.S. political situation, we have high interest rates, we have a looming recession, we have stubborn inflation, that's a little bit more controversial, but because a lot of people have seen the CPI come way down and think that inflation is over with, including Paul Krugman, that says, well, if you take out food and energy, what's the other one he wants to take out? He basically takes out everything and says, well, actually, inflation's killed now. It's okay if you don't eat or sleep or drink.
Exactly.
But anyway, I think inflation is stubborn and is likely to go up in the next few months. The inflation numbers are likely to go up in the next few months. We can talk about why in a second. So I look at those are the sort of main things you can look at in terms of the economic environment or the geopolitical environment, and then say, well, is that a good environment for gold? And I would say of those, the least important actually are the geopolitical tensions, because historically, if you go back 40 years, geopolitical incidences have been positive for gold, but they've typically had a short-term impact on the price of gold. The only time they tend to have a longer term impact when gold is already doing well. So the Iran hostage situation, for example, at the end of the 80s had a very positive impact on gold, but gold was already in a bull market. Think back to the Russian invasion of Ukraine last year. Gold was moving up a week before the invasion on expectations. Gold spiked when the tanks rolled over. Within 2 months, it was back to where it was before all the fuss started. So, and that's not untypical of geopolitical. Look at 9/11, same thing. But people misunderstand it. They think a war is inevitably good for gold. And frankly, apart from as human beings, we don't really want to rely on nasty things happening abroad to make our investments go up. The plain fact is that we don't need to. There are other things. So that's of the factors I mentioned, that is actually the least important in my mind. There's a misunderstanding. A lot of people misunderstand the impact of rising rates and recession and this and that. And for a lot of people, the misunderstanding comes from thinking any correlation has to be contemporaneous, which it doesn't. You can have a very strong correlation if you just move your graph 6 months apart. And so you look at a graph of the last 2 years of inflation and the price of gold, And you'd say, well, there is no correlation. Inflation goes up and gold goes down, and inflation goes down and gold rates, I'm talking about now. But the reason is that the market is always looking ahead. So if inflation is moving up, the market says, what is the Fed's reaction to that likely to be? Fed's reaction is likely to be higher rates, which is bad for gold, so gold goes down. Inflation comes down, and the market's expectation is, oh, well, that means the Fed's going to cut rates, so gold goes up. So it's all, you always, it's not necessarily a contemporaneous interaction. So I think where we are right now, we're at the situation, obviously, everybody thinks that the Fed has sort of finished hiking. They may still surprise us with one more. I mean, in the dot plot, you know, the famous dot plot yesterday. Is today Thursday? Yes, yesterday. Yeah. 12 out of 19 said they predicted another rate hike this year. Well, there's only
one more meeting, right?
2 months left.
Right. Yeah.
I thought, I was surprised at that, but 12 out of 19 expect a rate hike this year. So there may still be one, but whether there is or not is not the point. We know we're almost at the end of rate hikes. Now the key question is higher for longer.
Yes.
For how much longer? And recession is another thing. Automatically, yeah. People would say... Your intuition would immediately say recessions are bad for gold and gold stocks. But in fact, that's not the case. You look at every recession in the U.S., every U.S. recession back to the 1960s, I think there's been 9 of them, but everyone back to the 1960s, gold itself went up in the recession period, went up in every single one but one of those. That's a pretty strong record. Gold stocks went up in all but 3.
Look out there, eh?
And they beat the S&P in the 3 where they didn't go up. So the lesson from that is gold is most likely to do well in a recession. Gold stocks are probably going to do well in a recession. But in any event, they're going to beat the S&P. So I don't think... Let me speak like English people do in all these negatives. I don't think a recession means you should be out of gold and gold stocks. So I think if you look at those different factors I mentioned, 5 out of 6 of them are actually positive in varying degrees for gold. So I think this is a very positive environment for gold.
You end your title with when will it take off?
Yeah.
Right? The timing, I think, everybody's been calling for a recession for at least the last 12 months, it feels like. And what is your prediction on timing there?
Well, funny you mention recession. I'll come to the timing on gold, but recession... Again, everybody expects things that are inevitable to happen sooner than they do. And, everybody's heard of these variable lags, but the fact that we haven't had a recession yet makes people say, oh, we're not going to have one, it's a soft landing. Again, looking at those 9 recessions that I talked about back to the 1960s, not those 9 recessions, sorry, the 9 rate hiking cycles. So you look back, and the average length of time from when the Fed started raising rates until when the recession started was 22 months. Well, as I recall, the Fed's first rate hike was in April of last year. We're not at 22 months yet. So we haven't even reached the average. We haven't even reached the average lag time. I suspect that there's... I would suggest that there's good reasons to think that the lag time this time may be even longer. Longer because we all know that real rates
yes.
are what matters more than nominal rates. And real rates only went positive in the U.S. in June, July. So we've only had a few months of real rates. That's one reason. The second reason, frankly, is that we had basically 12 years of excessively loose monetary policy with ultra-low interest rates. So for years and years, households, corporations were able to repair balance sheets, were able to refinance at lower rates. I mean, people did it with mortgages. You know, as you know, in the U.S., they have 30-year fixed, which is a wonderful thing. And so people would refinance mortgages at lower rates. Corporations would term out their debt at lower rates. And so we had that long period of easy money. So because of that, we entered this period of rate hikes. We entered this period with people generally holding better balance sheets, which means that the runway before you have a recession is that much longer. You look at corporations, for example, and I can't give you the absolute numbers, I'm sorry, but you look at how much debt, corporate debt, is rolling over this year, 2023, and is frankly relatively low. It's, look at 2024, almost double. It's almost twice as much debt rolls over next year. And in 2025, it's another 50% on top of that. So if you want to see about when will interest rate hikes have an effect on corporate America, you look at the term maturities, and you would expect it to be in 24, 25. Yeah. You would not have expected it in 23. So anyway, I think we're on track for a recession. I don't think anything has changed there.
One of the reasons it might take longer is that the U.S. keeps throwing money at the problem, meaning the CHIPS Act, Inflation Reduction Act, things like that, that might prolong it as well, right?
Of course, absolutely. No, absolutely.
Maybe on top of that, like, do you think the Fed actually has enough wiggle room to soften the blow, to create a soft landing scenario? So if they see the economy starting to crumble, they can lower rates enough to sort of like cushion it?
I think they could do that, but here's the question. Will they quash inflation without causing a recession?
No.
And I think the answer to that is absolutely no. So if they let go of inflation, they say, okay, guys, we don't care about inflation anymore. Stopping a recession is our number one goal.
No.
Then I think they could probably succeed, but at the risk of dramatically higher inflation.
Let's get to the topic of your workshop that you're hosting as well, because I think that's a perfect connection. It segues perfectly over, because it's how to invest in the current environment for asset protection and profit. So given all that, how should we invest right now, Adrian?
Well, first of all, the global markets, both the U.S. and other major global markets around the world, I think are overvalued, and particularly the U.S., but also some other markets. And so a lot of people already invested, of course, but if you invest in a market when it's already, you know, at a one or two deviation from the mean, your time frame to get back to break even can be quite long. So what I'm saying is, I didn't express that very well. What I'm saying is, I think this is a very dangerous time to be investing in, generally speaking, the broad market and the major global markets. And that parallels with history. If you look at what asset classes have done well in stagflationary periods, which is what I'm expecting, a stagflation, which means a recession or a slow economy with stubborn inflation or rising inflation, as a stagflation, developed market stocks have been negative performers, been bad. So we're buying very, 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 very little in that area. Emerging market stocks tend to do better.
Mm-hmm.
But they tend to do better if the dollar is falling. So the jury is out on when the dollar might start falling. So that's why the emerging market stocks, of course, people are expecting rotation. I mean, right now, the ratio of the big caps of the big markets to the smaller markets, you can measure this by the Morgan Stanley World Index and the Morgan Stanley, that's true too. The ratio of the U.S. to foreign markets and the ratio of major markets to smaller markets, both of those are at extreme levels. But the reason the smaller markets haven't moved up is because the dollar is still stronger. A lot of those markets, companies have dollar debt, which obviously weighs heavily on all. So what do you invest in? I think you should look for, if you're an income-oriented investor, look for sources of income which are likely to be not only reliable, but are likely to be able to go up in a weak economic environment. And so it might be oil and gas LPs, for example, where you have the ability for their distributions to rise even in a weaker economy. It might be some of the business development companies, which people, again, misguidedly assume do badly in recessions. In fact, they don't do badly in recessions. And the reason is that during recessions, the banks stop lending to small business, which means alternate sources of finance, such as business development companies, are able to lend money to better quality companies than they are when the banks are lending freely. So in a recessionary period, the BDCs can lend money at 10, 11% to high quality private companies who can't get bank financing. So I would look at some of those. And then beyond that, I think gold and silver stocks are far and away the best place to be investing. Far and away. That's not a surprise for me to say that, right? But far and away, if you think the outlook for gold is positive over the next couple of years, and then you think that the gold stocks are so ridiculously undervalued. Now, they're only undervalued if gold goes up, of course. If gold goes down, it will grow. But the environment and the outlook for gold is very positive. And at the same time, the gold stocks, which generally are in much better shape than they were, say, 10 years ago. You look at the senior stocks, the XAU, for example. That is on a balance sheet. That is cash positive on a balance sheet. So all, which is astonishing when you think mining is a capital-intensive industry. You would expect some debt, but in fact, there's cash positive on the balance sheet, and you look at the ratios, price to earnings, price to cash flow, price to book value, dividend yield. On all of those metrics, the gold stocks are cheaper than the broad market. Never seen that before in my investing career.
I think Newmont pays a 4% dividend.
Yeah.
Something is right around there.
Yeah,
which is
not
really
my favorite company, but yes. And B2 Gold has a 4.5% dividend yield. Several of them have 3% dividend yield.
Interesting.
Now, I don't invest in gold stocks for dividends, by the way.
No, no.
It's just a reflection of how cheap they are.
Yeah. I'm more of a growth guy over value when it comes to mining stocks, personally.
Yes,
so, one last topic I want to tackle with you, and you hinted at it, is the dollar and the strength of the U.S. dollar. Because you hinted at, okay, we need a weaker dollar if that happens.
Yeah.
Like, what would make the dollar tumble, actually, in this environment right now?
No, that's a good question. I mean, we all know, of course, you know, why the dollar's been so strong despite the U.S.'s bad fiscal and trade deficits, which typically would mean a weaker currency when you have the twin deficits weak. And everybody says it's, you know, the cleanest shirt in the laundry basket or whatever metaphor you want to use. And all of that is true. I think that's beginning to come to an end. It's beginning to come to an end because of the Treasury market. You know, the Treasury issuance is going up a lot, as you know, and it's going up for three reasons. In the short term, because they have a backlog of issuances from during the debt ceiling negotiations when they couldn't issue Treasuries. So you've got a backlog that has to come forward. I wouldn't underestimate the importance of that. That's significant. The second reason is because the deficit continues to increase, and so they have to issue more debt for the deficit. And the third thing, which is perhaps the most longer term, the most important of all, is that the government has been issuing bonds as short maturities for so long, instead of taking advantage of the low interest rates. To me, it's criminal. This is a tangent. But it's criminal that the Treasury did not issue more 30, let alone 50 and 100-year bonds, when rates were basically at zero, and everybody was looking towards the U.S. as being the beacon of hope in the world. The U.S. government could have issued 30-year bonds probably at 2.5%.
Yeah.
And it's criminal, but they didn't. And
instead, Yellen's got a lot of flack these days in the media as well.
Well, she should. She deserves it. But frankly, it's not just Yellen. It was the last guy, Trump, and it was the guy before Obama. This has been going on, you know, for like 12 years now. They've been issuing bonds at low rates. And so what you look at is, if you look at the Treasury maturities, you see, basically, if you look at the next 12 months, it's like 90% of them are maturing in the next, not 90, but 80% of them maturing in the next 12 months. And then you go out, when you get to 30 years, there's hardly anything maturing. So the point of that, of course, is if you issue at the short end, then 12 months later, you've got new issuances. So the amount of new issuances in the Treasury market is just zooming. At the same time, the demand for Treasuries is going down. And the demand's going down because the traditional buyers of Treasuries, you know, historically, are not in the market. The Fed's no longer buying treasuries. As long as QT's on, they're going to stop that soon, but at the moment they're not. The biggest foreign buyers, you know, they're traditionally they're the next sort of segment. China, Japan, Russia. Well, we know Russia's not buying. China's not buying. Japan's actually been a net seller in the last few months, just small. But we can't rely on those three to support the treasury market. The U.S. banking system are buying fewer, not none, but they're buying fewer treasuries than they have done for various reasons. One is they're losing deposits to money market funds, so they're not buying. And so the buyers that are left are pension funds, insurance companies, but also a lot of hedge funds. And these people demand a higher rate of interest. I mean, they demand a higher rate of interest. You've got issuances going up. You've got demand going down. So the answer is higher interest rates. And so I think the dollar will be affected by that because, as there's just less demand for treasuries, there's less money coming into the dollar.
Well, the U.S. Treasury Department announced this week, actually, $775 billion they need to issue by the end of the quarter.
Yeah.
So that's a big, big number, and we'll see some cracks maybe in the system sort of crystallize.
So. And I mean, if you're a hedge fund and you're just buying for a trade, you're only going to buy if your interest rate is high enough.
Exactly.
It's not like you're China and you've got, you know, $3 trillion. Well, you may as well put them in treasuries.
Yeah, need to be incentivized to a degree. Yeah. But if you get 5% on that or more, then you might be interested in it.
Yeah.
So, fantastic. Adrian, let's wrap it up here.
Okay.
Fantastic conversation. Great insights. Thanks so much for stopping by.
No,
really
thank
appreciate
you very
it.
Much.
It's always good to see you in person.
And I always enjoy your interviews.
Fantastic. Okay. AdrianDayAssetManagement.com. Is the domain? I think it is, right?
AdrianDayAssetManagement.com, yes.
Fantastic. Awesome. Okay. Everybody else, thank you so much for tuning in. We hope you found this conversation just as insightful as I did. Make sure to follow us. Smash that like button and that subscribe button, of course, as well. And we'll be back with lots more here from New Orleans. Thank you so much for tuning in.